Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Is this the first time in the history of college football that a coach officially on the Michigan one team staff is saying the other team is going to kick your ass?
Russ Dellinger.
Put it in your corncob pipe and smoke it. God, we're off the rails. All right.
And SI's Pat 40.
Yeah, no, it's real. 100% real. I'm glad they're taking it to Congress to demonstrate that this actually happened. And now, yes, let's get it across the wall north of the border, and let's see it at Capitol Hill in the United States.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Invesco QQQ. Week three, gentlemen, week three. And look, we try to be honest with our audience. We try to encourage our audience. We try to provide relationship advice at times for our audience. And so, look, we're in the college football business. We'd like to tell you every single week is must watch wall to wall. And sometimes it is at different points of your life. Maybe you don't got a whole lot of thing going on with the whoever you'd like to be seeing in the world. And you sit down and sit there and get really fired up to watch 14 hours on Saturday. But in the truth is, there's a lot of really interesting games this weekend, and we're going to get to them. This is the weekend. This is the weekend, gentlemen. And we found most of our listeners are gentlemen. The women, they get a little secret. I'll get the final little secret touch here what we're doing. This is the weekend you say, hey, maybe we should go to the farmer's market on Saturday. Mm-hmm. How about that apple orchard? Are the apples ready to be picked yet?
It might be early on the apples, but you know what?
How about
your chance to try it?
You, me, and the kids, we go for a bike ride at the park early Saturday afternoon. This is your moment. If they're not really tuned in, you're not really missing a whole lot. The better games are at night. Some interesting games, mind you. But next week, you're going to want to be glued in. You got to buy your time right now. Punting is winning.
Yes, this is a good week for a good strategic punt.
Good strategic.
You're facing basically a third and 14 in terms of viewer interest. You're backed up on your own 22. Yeah, this is a good time. Punt, play defense, and win a little bit of PR battle with your rest of your family.
Just be present. You know, you're not missing a whole lot. Now, a lot of times these are the weeks where everything, all hell breaks loose, but you got to play you got to play the cards dealt to you. This is that week.
Yeah, you know what's happening this week. There's going to be like five upsets and crazy world stormings. And
You're not helping. We're trying to keep our people in their relationships. We're not helping.
I hope my wife doesn't listen to the pod. She's going to be like, wait, why aren't you still at you? I thought we were going to go out on Saturday. I thought this would. Dan said that this was the weekend to punt.
Yeah, that's true.
Aren't we going to punt? It's the last weekend in D.C. for the pool, basically. Let's go.
I will say, Ross, Liz, his wife, who I've known for a long time, but I tweeted in like on August 19th that was the last Saturday without college football until January, and she tweeted back, "Yay!" in all lowercase. I don't think she was really feeling it.
Yes, the wife of a sports writer.
There's your chance, Ross. This is your chance.
Yep.
For all of you, you don't have any good ideas, cue up those Cialis commercials and see what they're doing in that.
There you go. The side-by-side tubs on a hillside.
Yeah, the hot tub. The hot tub with mountain, the rose petals.
Yep. Yes, hike a mountain, find two tubs, pretend the water's not cold because it's on top of a mountain, climb it.
Figure out how to get two ceramic bathtubs on top of a mountain.
Let's refinish some furniture together, hon. Let's go to the antique store and march around. And you got to be really present. Those guys are really into it.
Yeah.
Like they're really excited. Not like, what am I doing up here on top of this mountain? Who the hell left this ratty old tub? This is disgusting.
A bear has been in this tub more recently than a human.
Okay. So But other than that, get back to watching. No, there are some good games, and we're going to get to a whole bunch of them. Wanted to get to this. We had touched on this topic previously, but it's really heated up this week, and that is the eligibility status of North Carolina receiver Tez Walker. He has been denied a eligibility waiver as a transfer. It's a somewhat complicated story. He originally enrolled. Actually, Pat, you tell it. Give the facts, and then we'll get to your opinion. You wrote a very strong column that kind of went in line with a lot of what we said here. But tell us the whole story, because there's a lot of stops, and I don't want to miss one.
There are. Tez Walker, coming out of high school, was going to go to East Tennessee State. He had an injury. He delayed his enrollment. He then chose to go to North Carolina Central. He is from North Carolina. That was 2020. 2021 was his freshman year. They didn't play due to COVID. He transferred then to Kent State, used his one-time free transfer for immediate eligibility, played 2 years at Kent State, and then transferred to North Carolina for this season. He was really good last year at Kent State, and the belief was that he could probably step in and be North Carolina's number one receiver. He's a big guy, 6'3", 200. People think he has an NFL future. This ran into the, new legislation or tightened existing legislation, basically, from the NCAA saying, we're not granting waivers to everyone who comes down the pike. And so that became the battleground, and North Carolina and Tez Walker argued several different things at different times. And it was a little bit of kind of moving the goalposts around. First, he needed to move back because of an ailing relative. Then there were mental health concerns that were raised. And then it was NCAA protocol and procedure that he enrolled on January 9th. And the new rule did not get formally voted into effect until January 11th, 2 days after he had gotten there. So all these things went into it, and they kept trying to get legislative relief to get him eligible, and the NCAA kept denying it. And Mack Brown and other people at North Carolina kept increasing the public campaigning and, frankly, the anger towards the NCAA every time there was a rejection. And it became a very, very public thing. People coming out of the woodwork left and right to say how terrible this was, that what they were doing to Tez Walker. And then finally, his last appeal was rejected last week, and Mack Brown put out a floridly angry statement, long statement, saying he's lost faith in the NCAA and that it ended with shame on you, NCAA, all caps, exclamation point, shame on you. And then the AD, Bubba Cunningham, weighed in. And then the school president, Kevin Guskowitz, weighed in. And then they held a trustees meeting to see if they could take legal action against the NCAA and decided not to. And then the NCAA disclosed that the people who are on this committee, who they're not people who sit in an office in Indianapolis. They're people who work at James Madison and Northwestern and the Big East Conference and Temple and wherever, were being bombarded with vitriol threats, specific threats, and it was really bad. So that's kind of the backdrop for all of this that got us to this point where we are today.
All right, let's start with this. In your opinion, we'll start with Ross, should Tez Walker be eligible to play this year?
You know, it's fascinating when you talk to administrators and all the answers that you get on this situation, because there's some that believe all waivers should be granted and it should be more open, which we've seen before. There's many believe that basically no waivers should be granted. There's even some that believe that players should transfer whenever they want to and there shouldn't be a waiver process at all. His situation is different than some others. I think it's a little unusual. However, based on what Pat wrote about it, how the NCAA has decided in when I say the NCAA, right, we, as we do in this show quite a bit, remind everybody that the NCAA is the schools making the rules. They are the membership, and they're making the rules. And one of the things they did last year was restrict the determination of who gets a waiver and who doesn't, and limit it. And that was the goal. So, you know, it's one of those things of you know, all the coaches and the administrators really want rules enforced until they are the ones on the other end of the enforcement. And we've seen that quite a bit. And it's kind of like a microcosm of the bigger issue in the NCAA in general, and in college sports in general. Of it's kind of like, and I was talking to an AD about this yesterday, it's kind of like the NIL collective situation when administrators and coaches are back at their schools and they're communicating with collectives, and they you know, they tell them things like, hey, we need, you know, we need these players, we need to do this, we need to do that, you know, here, you know, let's have a fundraiser for you, this and that. And they get in a room together on an NCAA committee, and it's oh my God, collectives are terrible. What are we doing? We're crazy. No, we have to stop this. But when they're back, you know, they're so it's really interesting. I, you know, judge by going by the rules, he probably shouldn't be eligible, and that's the rules that the members wanted.
So I'm going to trust that they had a committee here, and they have like whatever 10 smart people who really dug into this, and I don't, and probably know the facts of the case at a level. The easiest thing to do is to scream the NCAA sucks, the NCAA is evil, the NCAA doesn't care. It's just this nebulous thing, and it's a cheap concept, and I don't think anybody thinks I'm anything other than a longtime critic on substance of the NCAA. I'm hardly the apologist for the NCAA. I just think you got to be fair to what the hell is this, right? The most interesting argument to me for Tez Walker is the January 8th is when he transferred, and January 10th is when they set the rule. I don't know how you
9th and 11th to be picayune okay. About it. But yeah.
There you go. See, I don't know the facts, and this is the stuff that people who do. How are they retroactively putting this in? It's like, look, I caught you going 65 on that road on Tuesday. On Thursday, we lowered the speed limit to 55. Therefore, you owe me $100. Well, it wasn't, you know, like, I don't get that. I have yet to see an argument on why that isn't the overriding factor. It wasn't the rule in place at that time. So for that reason, I probably would allow Tez Walker to play under this system. But as, and we'll let Pat take the floor here because he's really strong on this, they begged for guardrails. We just listened to 2 years of people like Mac Brown screaming for guardrails. The transfer portal is out of control. And you know, I'll recap it again briefly. The transfer portal used to be, you wanted to transfer, they didn't have a portal. If you wanted to transfer, you had to go in and ask your coach basically for permission to transfer. They would badmouth you, block schools you could go to, 20, 30, 39 schools once, entire conferences, not just the conference you're in, but other conferences. They do everything they could to make it impossible. College football coaches were so abusive of their power in limiting transfers that the NCAA had to create the portal so that they could get the coaches out of the way. You wouldn't have to go in and sit down with your coach and say, I want out. You could just go to the portal, it pop up, and then everyone could recruit you. And everybody, so they had to do this, and they went from having to sit out a full year, but before that, they started doing these waivers, and you had to get the permission, you had to have a sob story, and this is when, we call them Uncle Dialysis. Everyone's got an uncle on dialysis. Everyone's got a grandmother who's old and dying. Everyone's got some sob story. Some of them are real. Some of them were, you know, not really. And it'd be like, my mom lives in Miami. I need to get back home, so I'm going to transfer to Florida State. And you're like, you're not like holding her hand at the clinic.
No.
You're right. But that was how it was. It got abused, of course. Coaches encouraging all, schools, encouraging these sob stories. So then they just said, hey, screw it. Everyone can transfer one time. Then they said anytime. Then everyone started screaming about that. And you literally have, you have this from your column, Pat. Here's Mack Brown, July 2022 on the Greg McElroy on the radio or whatever, one of his shows. We have to have some guidelines. We have to have some guardrails. We just throw it out there. People are going to take advantage of the lack of rules. And that's kind of what happened to us. Then you had the transfer portal. It puts more pressure on them. And it goes on and on, right? They scream for guardrails. So now they come back, tighten the rules, and they have this committee. And these are well-meaning people. They're not, you didn't get into college athletics just to screw college athletes. And now they're making a determination. I kind of disagree with the determination, or I have serious questions about it, and I really don't care. But now it's, you guys are evil. I mean, the hypocrisy of North Carolina on this is what troubled me originally on it and troubles me now. Pat, I know you even have more on that.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, in the column, I said Mack Brown has been Captain Guardrails. You know, he has been maybe the loudest voice out there decrying everything that's going on in college football. NIL is terrible. Collectives are terrible. The transfer portal is terrible. Oh, wait, we need to get this receiver through the transfer portal. So can we please just have a heart and let my guy in, please? Look, as you said, it is a tough case. If they had ruled Walker eligible, I don't think people would have sat around and said, this is a gross miscarriage. He doesn't deserve it, blah, 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 blah. The one thing, Dan, in terms of the timing, and you're right, that there is 2 days between enrollment and formal voting of the rule. However, in August 2022, the Division I Board of Directors voted to tighten the waiver rules. Typical of the NCAA, it then takes 4 months for them to actually convene and have a vote. Yeah. So that's the lag time there.
I like that. It's a loophole.
But they knew it was coming. Everybody knew it was coming.
Everyone knew it was coming, to Ross's point.
Didn't vote for it? Until it's voted, it's not voted.
Yeah. I mean, sure. Look, if you want to say they retrofit this and screwed this kid, that's an argument you can make. But the extent to which Caroline took this, and I will say this, and I've said this before on the podcast going back years, my ideal situation would be one-time free transfer, no waivers thereafter, period. There is no waiver committee. You don't even hear them. Nothing is going to change that rule. I don't care about just Uncle Dialysis. I don't care about this coach was mean to me. I don't care about that coach got fired. You can transfer, but you ain't going to play. You can transfer once and play immediately. Second time, no. Period. And that's where the NCAA gets itself into trouble here by even allowing the gray area. And boy, schools and their lawyers and their fans will jump into that gray area and push as hard as they can for whatever they can. And this is, as I said in the column, this is a tried and true playbook, what North Carolina did. They just took it to another level of, we are going to paint the NCAA as heartless and terrible. And look at this poor, great young man that they are keeping out of uniform this year. But they took it, again, further than I have ever seen a school take it before. And the guy doing the biggest pushing was like one of the guys who has been decrying everything the most. And when it ends up with these people who volunteer for these committees being besieged by crazy-ass fans, that's when you got a problem. It's gone way too far.
Well, and maybe that should be the next move is, and it's probably a question for Charlie Baker or others who are on those committees from actual NCAA schools, maybe NCAA presidents, board of directors folks, is should the next step be we're eliminating the waiver process completely, we're eliminating the waiver committee, you have one time to transfer, that's it, bottom line. If you transfer a second time, you got to sit out a year. Maybe that should be the next step, you know? I mean, I think looking several steps down the road here, especially when it comes to NIL bills in Congress and what we've seen lawmakers say, is college sports may eventually be right in any time transfer. And you might just open the floodgates completely, and that would also eliminate the waiver process.
I'm leaning now, and we talked about it last time. I think the transfer portal is actually far, far more beneficial than I originally suspected. But I would go that route. Because here's what happens. You say no, no committee, no waivers. Okay, fine. But then you get the story of player, he's got three younger sisters and he's off at college and he's going to be a first round pick, but he needs to play. But then his parents get in a car wreck and die. Someone needs to come home and take care of the kids. And he wants to transfer back, and the school's one block from, like, right? And everyone's, and then the NCAA goes, well, we don't have any way. And everyone's, you heartless, this. You can't win when you have to try to judge morality. And that's why it got so abused. Because you're like, I don't know. They were getting to the point where they're like, can we see mom's medical records? Does she really have cancer?
Right.
And it's like, this is crazy, right? So you're better off with no waiver or hard line. The problem is you have people screaming for hard lines and then exploiting it and exploiting fan passion and exploiting the NCAA's well-deserved, mind you, horrible public relations record.
Yeah. No, look, the NCAA is the easiest, biggest target for a reason, because they've done a lot of really bad work over the years. Okay. But in this case, and in a lot of cases, when you get down to it, and it's not just the heartless, nameless, faceless NCAA, there are smart people that are trying to make good decisions here. And this one, I agree, there is a bit of a judgment call to it. The one problem, like, if you just allow unlimited free transfers, who graduates? I mean, that's again supposed to be part of the equation.
The kids that want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, if they go unlimited transfers, Mac Brown's going to be screaming his head off.
Of course.
That's the problem.
That's why did the NCAA take this step to begin with in August of 2022? Because people like Mac Brown were all screaming their head off. Like, we've got to change this. We can't have this. It's free agency. And so, all right, let's try to rein in free agency. Oh, wait, but when you do it to Tez Walker, it's terrible.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
It's the vitriol there and the lack of acknowledgement. I don't know. It is what it is. I'd go full transfers at this point, but I do think that's an interesting case. I don't know why they didn't win it. I don't think the people on this committee sat around. And again, people just throw out NCAA like there's just this bureaucrat and like a flickering light in some windowless room in Indianapolis just stamping. No, it's not how it works. North Carolina.
It'd be funny if it did, though.
It would be kind of funny, actually. There's like Scrooge McScrooge up there in Indy. Yeah.
When you do the animated TV show version of the NCAA, that's exactly what you.
Yeah, right. And then everyone screams, and it's just there's and like North Carolina wants to get rules rewritten. They're kind of a powerful entity in college athletics.
As I said in the column, they have a history of being able to get their way with the NCAA. 2017 infractions case, the greatest academic fraud case in history, where they unbelievably lawyered their way out of any punishment whatsoever. So they feel probably perhaps a little emboldened.
Yeah, maybe. All right, we'll be back right after this message. All right, bunch of interesting games, and I wanted to get to this one. Ross, you were writing about it. Alabama is hitting the road this week, a road non-conference game, and it's at the University of South Florida, a non-Power 5 team. They're going to play down in Raymond Jones Stadium, where USF always plays, although this time the upper decks will be full. That's 10-7. You had a great stat. You're calling 1,500. Over 1,500 FBS games this year, only 20 feature Power 5 programs visiting a group of five. Also this weekend is Iowa State at Ohio. Party in Athens, baby. Look out that, what's it called, Church Street or something? Whatever that street.
Whatever the street is.
They all know that street. Have you been to Athens? There's one street. That street.
Pretty college town where they drink a very large amount of alcohol.
Yeah, a lot of that street. Look out. It's going to be on. The Cyclones are coming. I love it. Part of a 2-for-1, basically, and cuts the cost a little bit. Obviously, it's a little different of a Power 5 game. You're playing in an NFL stadium. Half the crowd's going to be Bama, at least. It's a great recruiting area and all that. But what'd you find out about this deal, Ross?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting when I saw it on the schedule. It's been 20 years since Alabama has played a road non-conference game against a non-Power 5 team, going back to Hawaii in that one in 2003, and that one was only played, as we all remember, because Alabama was on NCAA probation, and so that was their way of going bowling in Hawaii. So yeah, it's been 20 years, and the question obviously is why? Like, why would Alabama do this? And I just took the 10 richest athletic departments reporting financial figures last year, and I look back at each of the 10. So basically, the 10 powerhouse football programs, most of them, and look back at when they have done something similar. Alabama, of course, is in that group, and when they have played a road game in 10 years, 10 teams, and there were, four games played like this, and two of the four were played in an NFL stadium. So that's a really big part of this, right? And it's why Greg Byrne from Alabama's AD said is one of the big reasons is you're in an NFL stadium, so you have a bigger venue to fill, you're in a bigger city, you're in a state that's talent rich, so you got recruiting also in here, a recruiting kind of situation, and yeah, it's probably going to be half Alabama fans, right? You're going to get fans from the Gulf Coast area coming down. There are certainly Alabama fans in the Tampa area. You're regional. You're in your kind of footprint, so to speak, still on a regional basis. And then the other reason is financial. Usually, it costs anywhere from $1.5 million to $2 million for a bye game against a G5 team, for a Power 5 to buy a G5 team and get them to come to their stadium. It's usually, like I said, 1.5 to 2 million. And with this 2-for-1 deal, Alabama only will pay 1 million. It'll pay 1 million in the last year of the deal in 2026 when South Florida goes to Alabama. So this year, Alabama goes to South Florida. Next year, South Florida returns. And then you get South Florida returning again in 3 years. So it's a little cost effective measure as well. And I think South Florida believes that's fair because Alabama, the powerhouse Alabama, right, is coming to your city, coming to your venue. They're gonna probably have pretty close to a sellout. As of Tuesday, they had like 4,000 tickets left. Raymond James seats about 70,000 or so. So they gonna have going to sell a lot more concessions, going to sell a lot more beer, have a lot more hotel nights and all that stuff. So they see that as kind of a fair type of trade. But it is interesting. And oftentimes, as we've seen recently, specifically last year, this doesn't work out a lot of times for Power 5 teams who do this. We saw a lot of times we have these in the ACC. The ACC probably does them more than any other league. We saw three specific ones in the ACC last year. North Carolina went to App State. I think that was a 2-for-1 as well. NC State went to East Carolina. And then there's one more that I'm missing.
Virginia Tech at Old Dominion.
That's right. Virginia Tech at Old Dominion. Virginia Tech lost. And North Carolina State barely won, I think, on a last minute, maybe missed field goal against
missed
the
NC. Field goal or extra point by ECU. Yeah.
And then of course North Carolina barely survived 63-61 against App State. So I don't expect this one to be as close as I wrote in that story. You got a first year coach. He's got a new roster. Alex Golish, former offensive coordinator at Tennessee. He himself has actually a really interesting story. He's born in Moscow. He's from Russia. It's pretty interesting. But it's an intriguing game. And for South Florida, you not only get powerhouse Alabama, you get a primetime TV slot, ABC at 3:30.
Yeah, like Alabama likes to play those neutral site games a lot of times to start the season in Orlando or in Atlanta or in Dallas. Well, those are good recruiting areas, so let's go show up, and we know our fans are going to come. And this is similar. It's technically a road game, but you're going to have at least half the crowd, and you're in a place where you want to recruit. So to me, it's not quite the same as a neutral site but it's going to be close to it. And so, this makes sense if you're Alabama to do it.
Huge opportunity for Alex Kolisch. I don't know if they're going to win the game, but you keep it close. But how about the number of recruits you can get? You're a first-year coach at a struggling program. You put out that, hey, would you like to come to a UCF game to all the kids in Florida? And they're like, we're playing Alabama. I'll come watch Alabama, but I'm your recruit. Like, I'm on your sideline. Alabama can't talk to them, but you can. So kind of interesting. Like, you're going to get a whole bunch of unofficial visits of people saying, hey, free tickets to the Alabama game. And maybe they like USF also. So, good. I like it. Good. Good concept. Interesting. Some of the Instagram stories of the Alabama players the night before meal or the meal before they travel or some meal this week. I'm sorry. Some meal on the training table was a cooked gator. They were eating someone cooked a whole gator and then put it on their training table. And you could eat how you go to like those pig roasts and you just kind of pluck it was like that. Now, obviously there are gators in Tampa area and the gators are Florida, but USF is the Bulls. So
they should have a big cow.
They could have just had a steak. I don't really know what's going on with that. Yeah. But anyway, I like this. Alabama's interesting. It's my understanding they want to be, they're a national program and a little like Notre Dame back in the day. They want to go all over the country and spread the Alabama brand. They're starting to get all their students from all over the country.
Right.
They have games at Wisconsin. They have game. They were going to play Oklahoma. Now it's a SEC game. They're going to West Virginia. Wow. They're going to Notre Dame. They're going to Boston College and Virginia Tech. Oklahoma State. I think Minnesota. Yeah, Minnesota. Yep, they're going
Minnesota,
to
West Virginia.
They're playing two Power Five teams most years, and they are getting out on the road. Ohio State, 2020. Like, this is all between now and 34. Nick Saban probably not coaching those teams, but Alabama kind of extending its national brand by taking, because all those it's very interesting. Those are all programs that don't always, not all of them, Ohio State, Notre Dame, even Wisconsin, but like Bama shows up in Minnesota or Boston, it's going to be a huge deal in those markets.
Yeah.
You know, really game. So that I find that kind of cool.
Yeah.
It is.
No, I mean, look, there's a lot of programs that just aren't willing to do that. And
Arizona,
Alabama's,
too. Yeah. And Georgia Tech. Alabama's. Like they're getting after it. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doing it up. All right. Sorry to cut you off. There are more games than I even thought. They're good work. All right. Item that got a little attention. People got fired up. Paul Feinbaum, our friend Paul Feinbaum at SEC Network and ESPN and, of course, Alabama legend, kind of viewed as the spokesperson for the SEC, which I'm sure the SEC just loves.
Mm-hmm.
He is not, although we love you, Paul. He stated that he put out on a show, FSU or some show. Was it on the –
Audible, I think, on The Athletic.
Yeah. Okay, and he said, FSU, Florida State, is not at the top of the SEC expansion wish list. Now, this has been reported before, and I think we've suggested it also, but from what we're hearing, but it, because it's Feinbaum, it created a big stir, and Florida State fans are not too happy about this because they are waiting for their chance to join the SEC. But in the next round of conference realignment, do you agree with Paul Feinbaum that FSU is not the the top choice, Pat?
Yeah, I do. I mean, from everything I have heard and gathered, they would rather add flagship schools in different states that they don't already have a presence in and add those TV markets. North Carolina, which I believe is the 10th most populous state in the country, the University of North Carolina, University of Virginia, next state up, the Seaboard, and also still contiguous with the SEC footprint. I think those two would be ahead of Florida State, which would be running against headwinds from the University of Florida, long time and influential SEC member. So things change. You never know. But as of right now, I don't think Florida State would be in a position to just say, we're ready, SEC, so bring us in.
Yeah, this is something that's especially in the last year or so, given the realignment in all this and in the consolidation of brands and stuff, it's been talked about quite a bit about, hey, what were the most attractive options for the SEC and the Big Ten in the ACC? And in fact, when I was working for Pat's outlet back in May, wrote a kind of realignment story, and one of the sections was about how, you know, the SEC would probably prefer North Carolina in Virginia over some of the others in that league. And it's very simple, as Pat mentioned. You know, number one, when a league has a school in a state, it gets what they call, I think it's network shares, extra network shares. That's additional revenue, I believe. And they don't have a school in the state of North Carolina. They don't have a school, SEC, in the state of Virginia. So those would be new states, new additional revenue, new money. They have a school in South Carolina, Clemson. They have a school in Florida, University of Florida. And I think number two, I think those schools in those states would probably fight against this move if they haven't already made their voices clear that they would not prefer those schools to get into the league. So yeah, this is not a real surprise. I think that obviously Paul knows the SEC really well and has talked to people in the league. So when he does say it, you know, it's probably coming from good places. But it's been fairly known that this is the case. Now, I think the Big Ten, you know, I they're not in any of these states, right? So maybe their approach is a little different, but I still would think, based on the academic standards of the Big Ten, that the North Carolinas and Virginias would, again, be more attractive.
100% on that. Florida State is not the top of the Big Ten list as of now, in what I'm hearing in the buzz. Right. Also with Florida State, like, I don't know this, but if you're Auburn, do you really want Florida? Like, they're pretty close. They're not
right
a state school, but everyone recruits this panhandle, and they don't need a Florida State there. North Carolina, Virginia, very Notre Dame, both SEC and Big Ten. You can make Indiana a contiguous, however you say it. Dang, I have not mispronounced the word all week.
Contiguous.
Contiguous.
You did mispronounce Tulane, by the way. I got a bunch of messages about that. It's Tulane.
Tulane. Okay, I'm sorry. I did mispronounce. Two mistakes. Tulane. Anyway, Indiana does touch Kentucky, so somehow Northern there Indiana could, yeah, you could make it work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. All right.
Sorry. That's the SEC's approach, is it would keep contiguous states. So just keep on expanding from state to state. As long as they touch each other, Oklahoma, let's go to Kansas. We can get into Nebraska. Sure. Now Nebraska, we can get into South Dakota. By the end of it, University of Washington will somehow be in the league. We're contiguous.
Contiguous. Or like some, you know, like sometimes you have those secession counties. They were like, well, we don't like our county, our state. So we're going to vote to leave the state. It's like, yeah, that's a little more complicated than just having a referendum on it. All right. Quickly, before we pick games, what game this weekend, because there are a bunch of interesting ones, are you most interested in seeing? I mean, there's a bunch of rivalry games where you don't have two ranked teams, but they could be, you know, they're not that bad. I mean, K-State, Missouri, BYU visits Arkansas. I don't know. There's a bunch of good games. South Carolina, Georgia hosts South Carolina. What game are you interested in seeing this weekend, Pat?
I'm going to zig a little bit. You mentioned it, actually, and say Kansas State, Missouri for a couple of reasons. One, this will be, as of now, the SEC's last chance to play a ranked non-conference opponent until the end of the year, when Florida plays Florida State, South Carolina plays Clemson, and presumably those are ranked. Kentucky, Louisville maybe ranked, who knows. But K-State 15, Missouri an unimpressive 2-0, and let's just say the SEC has had a craptastic non-conference run so far. They need some quality wins to reestablish itself as, you know, the big boss of the block. And They have not had them. So Kansas State comes in. I think they're the better team. Missouri is at home. Missouri lost at in Manhattan, I believe, last year and kind of set the die for where both those schools were going. Eli Drinkwitz could use some good wins. He's been just a 500 guy. His team has really been mediocre so far this year in beating Middle Tennessee and I think like South Dakota. So it's a game the SEC will be watching and Missouri fans will certainly have an interest in.
Well, there's a couple here I'll mention. One, Washington at Michigan State. You know, Michigan State, obviously first game without Mel Tucker. You got the interim coach in there. Mark D'Antonio is back as a special assistant. And you're hosting arguably a top five team. You know, Washington has looked incredibly good. Michael Penix has looked amazing. Now carried everything from last year, it seems like, over to this season. And this is their first real test, Washington. They hosted Boise and played, I believe, in FCS maybe last week. And so this is kind of their first real big test on the road at a Big Ten team. And then
hold on.
West Virginia.
Oh, we're doing this mispronunciation. You mispronounce Michael Penix first syllable. And considering they're playing Michigan State, you do not say it in a...
Dan, come on, man. Get your mind out of the
chopping
gutter.
Wood.
36
what
minutes.
Did I say?
Chopping wood.
Penix. Penix.
Pen, not.
Oh, I said, oh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So,
Oh.
Hey, at least Tulane over Tulane is not. Let's just. Penix. Considering Mel Tucker was in that paragraph you just said.
Not
pen.
Pen.
Pen. Pen. Writing a pen. Okay. Pen. Back to your regularly scheduled. Yeah.
Thank you, Dan, for that correction. Michael Penix will be making a trip to Michigan State. All right. Well, real quick, the brawl is happening.
Yeah.
Pitt at West Virginia, the brawl. And this one seems big, certainly for one of the coaches, but probably for both of them. I mean, Neil Brown at West Virginia really needs this game. As far as his job stability, it feels like this is one that he really needs to win. And the same on the other side, Pat Narduzzi, we talked about his candidacy for the Michigan State job. Well, it's games like this, you need a win to get jobs like that maybe. So big one, the brawl's always got some craziness to it. And I covered the one last year in Pittsburgh. This one's in Morgantown. It'll be crazy and rowdy, and I believe it's a night game, so look out.
Quick football note for you there on Michigan State, Wisconsin. I'm sorry, Michigan State, Washington. Michigan State has yet to give up a play of 30 yards or longer this season. One of just six teams that has not done that. Washington leads the nation, plays 20 plus longer in the air. They are vertical, vertical, vertical in the passing game. So that's going to be an interesting matchup of who gets their way there. Can Michigan State limit the big plays or can Washington get them?
I'm not. Penix. I don't think we're not picking that game,
right.
And that is, to me, is a little bit of a fentanyl game. Like, I don't know what Michigan State's going to do. The one thing we can all agree: don't touch fentanyl. That one holds up to me. You know, on the backyard brawl, I came across this story this week. The 1994 backyard brawl was at Pitt, and they had a public address announcer named Don Ireland, who I guess used to be pretty colorful in his public address announcing duties. And he did a couple messages during the game. He said, the owner of a tractor, or he said someone left their lights on in the parking lot. It's so the owner of a tractor West Virginia license plate EIEIO, please report to the parking lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Later, he said, fans are not permitted to smoke inside Pitt Stadium. That includes cigarettes, cigars, and corn cob pipes.
Oh, my.
No love lost.
He was fired. He was canceled back in 94. Yeah, he was fired for that. It's the end of Don Ireland's career.
Yeah, good run.
Puppet. Yeah, went out with a bang there.
With a
my
bang.
God.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, that's the kind of vitriol. Even the public address announcer's getting in on it.
Poor West Virginia, man.
Yeah. I'll tell you the one I'm really interested in is LSU at Mississippi State. You know, when we talked last week or at some point, like some of these SEC teams that lost, that got blown out early, all of a sudden there's all these games that are huge pressure. And for LSU, this is a tricky game. It's at 11 a.m. in Starkville. Zach Arnett's defense is good. Their offense, maybe not so much. They went to overtime to beat Arizona. It's not a, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying Mississippi State's that good, but this is a tricky game. And LSU and Brian Kelly almost have to win. You start 1-2, and all of a sudden, these seasons start tumbling the wrong direction. And this is a massive challenge for LSU. They are a totally different team than they were under Mike Leach. Will Rogers went 13 for 17 last week with three TDs. He played a nice game. But under Mike Leach, he'd have 17 passes by the end of the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different game. They grind it out. They have a good defense. Jaquavius Marks is a good running back. I just feel like there's a ton of pressure on LSU in this game. The other is really Arkansas-BYU. Huge game for BYU. Going on the road in the SEC and a huge game for Arkansas, which, you know, again, the wobbly SEC, maybe there's an opportunity for the Fighting Sam Pittmans presented by Ham's Beer to have a nice little season here. So as much as we're telling you to go find the mountaintop punt, tubs, yeah. The punt, yeah. Maybe not so much.
Yeah, maybe go for it on fourth down after all.
Yeah. All right, let's do the race for the case. And some of these we just talked about, but now we'll talk about picking. Number 15, Kansas State at Missouri. Kansas State is a 5.5-point favorite, a home SEC dog. How about that? Game is at high noon Eastern on the SEC Network. So that's 11 a.m. in Columbia. Pat Forty, how's your alma mater going to handle this?
Not well. I don't, I'm not saying, I think Kansas State wins and covers. Missouri offense is very pedestrian so far. They are 12th in the SEC in yards. They've got quarterbacks who are just guys, basically. Running game, similarly, just kind of pedestrian. Kansas State, I just think, is an all-around better program that's been well put together, has showed they can play in difficult settings. They will be ready for the game. And I think K-State wins and covers the number on the road.
Yeah, I'm 5.5. I'm surprised this line is as low as that. I mean, people are picking Kansas State to maybe make the CFP. Pretty strong team. There you go. There you go. I think they've won like seven of their last eight games or something like that, Kansas State, going back to last year. And the loss is the bowl game to Alabama last season. So they've been on a tear here. I think it's six of seven. They've won their last six of seven. So, yeah, give me Kansas State to cover the 5.5 in Columbia.
Sean?
Yeah, I think Will Howard's a dude, and Chris Klieman has this team rolling. They do not. I think that Kansas State is just seeing Missouri as another day at the office, and Missouri is putting a little too much pressure on themselves to say, "Oh gosh, we have to beat KSU if we want to do anything with our season." So I am taking Kansas State to win and cover.
Every man a Wildcat. We're gonna sweep through on this. I'd like to be a lone Missouri Tiger. Sorry, Eli, but I can't do it. I picked K-State to go to the playoff. My picks are always so sound. There's no way I could back off of it at this point. All right. We have number 14, LSU at Mississippi State. We said heading to Stark Vegas. Game is noon on ESPN, 11 a.m. Starkville. That's a lot of cowbell real early. LSU, again, our odds are from BetMGM. BetMGM, sorry, I was supposed to say that earlier, I think. I don't know. But anyway, BetMGM, so you said it. LSU is giving 10. So Mississippi State is a home dog by 10. How is your alma mater going to handle being the home dog, Ross?
better than Pat's, I think. Better than Pat's. I do. I have faith in Zach Arnett's defense. And, you know, the second half of the Florida State LSU game, the Tigers just didn't look great. And it gives me doubts about them a little bit. So I just like I figured Kansas State would be more of a favorite than 5.5. I figured that LSU wouldn't be as big of a favorite as 10 on the road at Mississippi State. So give me Mississippi State to cover the 10. This one feels like a down to the wire.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the bullies as well there, Klanga. I think the defensive back issues that we saw against Florida State could also rear their head here. If you can exploit that secondary a little bit and get the Mississippi State passing game cranked up, I think they're at least in the game. I would expect LSU to still win, but it feels like a touchdown game that probably goes late before it's decided.
Yeah, these teams are strikingly even on the ground game. LSU ranked 50 rushing yards per game, Mississippi State 35th, only separated by 14 yards. But the passing yards is where I start deferring. LSU is boat racing them there. So I think if it gets down to the nitty-gritty, LSU can just start airing it out and take this and cover. I'm taking LSU covering the 10.
10's too much for me on this, and I feel like I might regret it, but that's too many points. I don't know the LSU offense. Obviously, they probably worked a few things out against Grambling, 72 points. But I'm going to take Mississippi State. I like the defense, and I like their ability to grind out some clock. 10 points is too much, so I'm going to take Mississippi State. All right, number 11, Tennessee at Florida. Man, this used to be a huge game. Florida has a bunch of rivalry games. They have a bunch of rivals. And this might be their best chance. They got Georgia and Florida State waiting. It's a potential tough year. Game is in Gainesville, another home SEC dog. This one, 6.5 per bet MGM. 7 p.m. on ESPN. Pat.
Vols to win and cover. Last year, Tennessee won, and you had that great year, and Florida was not very good, and it was still a close game in Knoxville. But I think I don't like what I've seen from Florida this year so far. And I admittedly, you know, paid no attention to their FCS walkover game against McNeese. But I paid plenty of attention to the Utah game. That's not a good offense. I'm not sure it's a well-run organization at this point. They've got a lot to show to me. And I think Tennessee has better talent and is a little further along in the building in year three under Heupel versus year two under Billy Napier. So I think the Vols go into the swamp, win, and cover.
Night kickoff in the swamp. The return of a annual kind of rivalry clash. I just think the Gators will be ready for this. Fans will be ready for this, and Graham Mertz and crew will play better. At least good enough to stay within a touchdown. So give me Florida to cover the 6.5.
I saw this from Jordan Moore on Twitter, who does some radio for Fox Sports Knoxville. He tweeted out that in the history of Tennessee versus Florida rivalry, a ranked Tennessee team has played an unranked Florida team 5 times. Tennessee is 5-0 in those games. 2 of those wins were in Gainesville. Tennessee is ranked. Florida isn't ranked, and I'm a sucker, so if I see a stat, I will take it. I am taking Tennessee to cover this game.
You're like me getting golf advice from YouTube. hit below the hall, hit behind the ball. You watch 2 different videos, they'd say the exact same thing. Everyone's an expert. I'm a sucker for it. I'm going to take Tennessee here. I think Joe Milton III is going to have a big game. I do not like this. I'm not loving the Gators. So, Milton has not totally aired it out yet, but I think this is going to be his game. I think they can cover 6.5. It's a little scary. These numbers are scary. All right. Next one is BYU. Actually, no, wait, Pitt at West Virginia, the backyard brawl. West Virginia was an underdog. Now they're a favorite. They are giving one at home, 7:30 p.m. on ABC. We'll see if the West Virginia public address announcer gets some revenge in 1994 and that Don Ireland making cracks about corncob pipes. You ever seen a corncob pipe? I've never seen a corncob pipe.
I wondering. Don't think I've ever seen one.
I knew a guy who smoked a pipe when I was a kid. It was pretty good.
You know, it's smells funny. Good. I'm actually wearing an Appalachian State shirt that I bought when I was in Boone last year, and they do have their Mountaineer mascot guy with a corncob pipe in his mouth.
There you go. Take it with pride. How is it insulting to you'd smoke a corncob? I would like a corncob pipe. Don't send me one. I'm just saying, like, give it a shot. All right. Put it in there. I'll smoke it.
Put it in your corncob pipe and smoke it. God. We're off the rails. All right. Backyard brawl. The brawl, man, nobody just walks up into Mountaineer Field at night and wins, man. Except if you're Pitt and you're
actually
a
lot of teams
underdog.
Do.
If you're Pitt and you're a 3-touchdown underdog in 2000, what was it? 2011? 07? 2007 and ruin and dash the championship hopes of the Mountaineers.
Shady McCoy. I mean, they did have some players on that team.
They did.
Yeah. Dave Wannstedt. So I'm gonna go West Virginia to win outright and cover the one or one and a half, whatever it is. This is a big one for Neil Brown and maybe this gets them rolling. I was at the brawl last year in Pittsburgh where West Virginia really outplayed Pitt, should have won the game, and then wild plays at the end. That was just one of the craziest last few minutes of a game that I've seen in a while. So give me the Mountaineers to close this one out at home.
No, I'm taking the Panthers here. Pitt did what they do. They dumped their one early game. They play like crap last week against Cincinnati. If you go back and look in recent years, they have one game like this, like that, every year as a favorite. They inexplicably lose, and then they turn around and generally play better. And I think they will play better than what we saw against Cincinnati. I think they're a better team and a better program. So I'm going to take the Panthers with especially getting points. Give me the point or point and a half or whatever the heck it is, and I'll go with it.
The backyard brawl reminds me of the Montgomery brawl. And if one of these teams were to pick up a chair and use it, it would be West Virginia. And we knew how that brawl turned out. I am going with the Mountaineers to cover this game.
See if G-Mac Cash does a song about this one. I'm taking West Virginia at home. I liked what I saw. I thought they got beat soundly in that second half against Penn State, but I like what I saw. They're going to take their tractors. They're going to leave the lights on. They're going to get their corn cob pipe. They're going to get on that little trolley, that little public transportation system. They're going to ride it down into. They're going to get the goalposts and strap them on top and ride around the little mountain and get down there into downtown Morgantown. It's going to be a party. It is going to be great. Go Mountaineers.
Did you all just give me Lone Panthers there?
Lone Panthers. I know.
I accept.
I got a buddy who's a Pitt fan. He's going to give me crap about this weekend. Oh, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm already high on that pipe, whatever. I haven't even smoked it yet. BYU at Arkansas. Razorbacks given 7.5, 7:30, ESPN 2. Ross.
Yeah, this is a really intriguing one, and I missed it. Earlier this week, I know we touched on it a little bit today, but I don't know what to do with this one. And I like Arkansas, but a touchdown seems like a lot. I feel like they're not as strong as Arkansas team we've seen in the past. I know this one feels like it's going to be pretty close. Slovis, right, is playing for BYU now. It's hard to keep track of where the quarterbacks are.
I know.
Yes, it's crazy. I think that they're going to keep it close enough, certainly closer than seven. So give me the Cougars in a kind of an odd game here, going to Fayetteville and keeping it tight at least.
Yeah, I tell you what we should do with this game is bet the under, because I don't think these are very good offenses, and I think the defenses are pretty good. BYU's first game, they beat Sam Houston's 14-0. Then they played an FCS game, which is basically a toss-out. Arkansas scored 28 against Kent State in their only FBS opponent. I'm going to take BYU to cover. I think it's going to be close and low scoring. This feels like a 21-17 Arkansas win, something like that. The Arkansas weapons really haven't fired too well. KJ Jefferson's played pretty well, but the running back, Raheem Sanders, hasn't gotten going. They've been playing a bunch of guys by committee. Sanders actually only played one game. He got hurt, I think, and then didn't play against Kent State, so we don't know. I'm not sure what his status is here, but I'll take BYU to cover the number.
I hate this game. I know that's ironic. I picked it.
You choose these games. What are you doing?
Yeah, I know. I don't know what I'm doing.
That's pretty much the ethos of the show.
I don't know what I'm doing is, yes, that's our calling card.
Arkansas, at least right now, appears like they can run the rock. BYU has shown no life in the ground game. Both defenses have done good with points against. I'll take a flyer on Arkansas in this game, and I will pick better games next week.
I'm counting on KJ Jefferson. I'll take Arkansas here. All right, lock of the week. Who's got one?
Yep.
Pat?
I got one. Yep. Let's go to the state of Texas. Big 12 game. TCU at Houston. This is Houston's Big 12 opener.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like them, though. I'm taking the Horned Frogs laying 7.5, I believe, is the number. Houston just hadn't been very impressive so far this year. They lost to Rice. Big upset there. They beat UTSA in the opener 17-14, and they were +3 turnover margin and won by 3 points. So I am not liking what I'm seeing out of the Cougars so far. Passing game kind of meh. TCU wasn't very good in the opener against Colorado, missed a ton of tackles. I think they've gotten better since then and will continue to improve. They still have good players there. They're still well coached. So I think the Frogs win pretty handily, cover the 7.5 at Houston.
I think my, quote, locks of the week are 0-2. So I'm going to pull a Costanza and do the opposite.
Oh, okay.
So I picked a game. Right in my mind, but you know, I'm like, no, let me go to the what I think might be the worst game to take, the worst game, because you know, the opposite, the Costanza. So, Arizona is a 17.5 point favorite at home against UTEP. So, just help me out, Arizona and Jed Fish, and don't drop me to 0-3. So, give me Arizona to cover at home against the Miners and somehow win by at least 18.
Miners were hot garbage last week as Dan Wetzel's lock of the week. So
yeah, didn't go so well. I screwed that joke up. I should have never picked them. But whatever, go Miners. All right, Sean.
Yeah, I have I'm going with Craig Bohl taking the Wyoming Cowboys into Austin, Texas, and continuing their devastation over the state. They took down Texas Tech. Wyoming getting 29.5. That's too much. Wyoming's too good. I'm going with the Cowboys to cover that big spread. Get ready, Texas.
I like that pick because I think Texas could come in a little flat after the big win in Tuscaloosa.
Very, very interesting here. All right. This is the most interesting lock of game of the week in betting things is I'm not going to pick this, but Michigan is hosting Bowling Green. Bowling Green is a 40.5 point favorite. Because Jim Harbaugh is suspended, he put everyone's getting a shot to be the head coach. Currently on his staff is his dad, Jack Harbaugh, who went to Bowling Green and made the Suns know that the Bowling Green fight song is, and he has been trash talking Jim Harbaugh all week saying Bowling Green is going to kick Michigan's ass. Is this the first time in the history of college football that a coach officially on the Michigan one team staff is saying the other team is going to kick your ass? Not just cover, but win. And could Jack Harbaugh call off the dogs somehow and keep them within the spread? I am fascinated. Like, I don't even know if this is legal anymore.
I'm going to guess they don't even turn on Jack Harbaugh's headset.
They probably don't. He's just barking out. It's like when you, he's just talking.
Anybody in there? Anybody hear me?
Hey, I said fake punt. I said fake punt. Yeah. I don't know. Very interesting, though. When has a coach on one staff said they're going to kick our ass and did it gleefully, taunted his son? I don't even know what's going on in Michigan. Anyway, not the game I'm going to pick. Iowa is hosting Western Michigan. The spread is Iowa giving 28.5 points.
Ooh.
Is this a trick question?
Yet.
Is this a trick question? Are they trolling us in Vegas? The whole season is about, can Iowa score 25 points in a game? Two straight weeks, haven't done it. 24 and 20. Now they're throwing out a spread above the Mendoza line, the Ferentz line. 28.5.
Line.
I think Western Michigan covers if they are able to score 0 points. If you can score 0 points, Broncos, I think you're covering. This is the lock. This is the lock.
You're not counting. Look, there's going to be a blocked punt touchdown for Iowa and a defensive score and a safety. So there's going to be 16 points right there. And Brian Ferentz
and
has to
I'm still not nervous. Still not touchdowns. Nervous.
Okay.
West Virginia, Western Michigan is covering 28.5. I mean, come on. Taking it. That's our race again. Okay. I know the show has gone long. We're chatty. We're chatty people. I have to get to this one thing. We'll just do it speed round. But have we all seen that the scientists in Mexico brought mummified alien corpses? You know, we're big on the aliens here.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
They brought proof of mummified alien corpses that are supposedly 1,000 years old, and they look like little Yodas or something. I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
A mummified alien corpse showed up 1,000 years ago in Mexico, and they presented it to the Mexico City Congress. I don't know if it's the whole country. Yeah, the whole country. Mexico's Congress. Okay, yeah. So imagine them trotting these two mummified aliens out into the United States Capitol.
Yes.
Yeah, Capitol Hill. Here you go. And bringing them in like a suitcase. Here.
Yeah, they look pop them open. Open it it's up. Like a big reveal. Yeah. It was kind of exciting. It's kind of exciting. It's like wow, those French diners. They pop the thing off. Hey, look what your dinner is. Okay, I can only imagine our American lawmakers going bananas.
Yeah,
I mean,
Ted Cruz is popping off one.
The whack jobs on Maria both Cantwell sides of the aisle. Other. Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, they'd just be like, well, why?
This is a conservative mummy. Oh, this is the liberal mummy.
Yeah, right. The liberals would choose one side and the conservative. I don't know which.
Yes.
It's absolutely a mummified alien. I don't know what would. Can someone do this to America? I hate politics, but I would watch that. Okay. Do we believe that these are actual 1,000-year-old mummified aliens, or there's a couple of crackpots down in Mexico who got the Congress to fall for this okey-doke? Pat 40.
Well, look, they absolutely look like the Area 51 fake stuff that you see, you know? I mean, like the cartoon version of an alien.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. It's still real. This is 100% verifiably real. Yeah, look.
40's buying aliens, what they're selling.
Of course. The aliens have been around a long-ass time. They probably looked at Mexico back in the day, said, you know, Mexican City, nice elevation. Wasn't very polluted 1,000 years ago. Let's go land there.
Good tacos.
Yeah. No, it's real. 100% real. I'm glad they're taking it to Congress to demonstrate that this actually happened. And now, yes, let's get it across the wall north of the border, and let's see it at Capitol Hill in the United States.
Let's go.
God, Pat almost convinced me. I mean, man, he's got a great argument there, but no, this is ridiculous. And I actually, I went to ask my wife, a political reporter. I was like, this isn't real, right? And, you know, just to see what she said. So, no, she confirms it's not real.
Darn.
What's not real?
These things.
How does she know?
She knows. She knows everything.
She's a wives know writer. Everything, know Dan. Things.
Good answer.
That's
good
right.
Answer. Yeah, good answer. Go apple picking. Sean, do you have a vote?
I think they're real, but I'm almost a little insulted that this is the crew they sent down here.
Yeah,
they did not look very intimidating.
No.
And I They're not reportedly the carbon there that they are testing is not aligned with anything on the planet, or there's a 70% disagreement with the DNA evolution. Send your best. That's what we're expecting here on Earth.
I think, you know what? They were small but mighty, and they could fly already 1,000 years ago. They were way ahead of us. They probably had stun guns. They were shooting Aztecs back in the day. Guarantee it.
Anytime. See, I think if the aliens, why do we assume that they'll have some kind of human form? That's my thing. Like, right. Why do we think exactly. They would have four yeah. arms right. and they kind of look human, yeah. but a little different? The yeah. fact they look like cartoon aliens to me is not unconvincing. However, I do like they yeah. went to Mexico City, because I find the whole UFOs only hang out in deserted like campgrounds in Northwest Kansas and stuff. Like, if you had a flying saucer and you're whipping around Earth, wouldn't you be like, what's that over there? Oh, that's Paris. Let me go check that out. No, let's go to this dark area where no one is. Like, if I'm flying around another planet, I'm looking for some action. You're not there to find, right? Hey, there's two guys drinking beers out at a campsite. Let's buzz by that. I'd be whipping around the Eiffel Tower in my little thing. I'd be going to New York, Singapore, whatever, Tokyo. They never see them there. Anyway, I don't buy it. Sorry, Mexico. Got to come a little stronger with your stuff than those two mummified puppets that you're bringing out. No go.
Dan Wetzel, if I'm flying to another planet, I'm looking for some action.
Yeah. Hey, come all the way. You'll come all. That's a long trip. That's a long trip. Came all the way here, and you only go to like a remote campground. Come on.
I will say, people, like, we, at the beginning of this show, the words that we're going to keep this under an hour.
Yeah.
And then we kept talking, and now it's...
Yeah, like, we're at
hour
15.
If you're listening this long, you're dying to hear what we think of the mummified aliens. I feel like it's the hardcore keeps going. Anyway, that's our show. We'll be back with Overreaction Monday. Should be out either late Sunday night or certainly for your commute on Monday morning. Enjoy the games. Appreciate everyone. Continue to subscribe and share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. We will talk to you later.